Okay, we're beginning here, 12 lines down on the top of Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. We left off yesterday with the Gemara saying that the klalot of Achia Shiloni were better than the brachot of Bil'am, and that Bil'am compared us to an Erez, which is strong and sturdy, but once it gets toppled over, once the wind is too strong, it topples over and it's done. On the other hand, Achia Shiloni cursed us like a reed, and the reed has give in it, so it gets blown back and forth, but eventually it gets uprighted again. Gizo machlif, it can grow back again. And even when it gets cut off, you can use it as a quill, you can use it to write a Sefer Torah stam with the kaneh. So now we're continuing with Bilam's brachot, which is vayaret ha-keni, he saw the keni, vayisam mishalom, and then he began to speak about them. So you have here, Bil'am gives his third bracha. Balak is fed up with him, says, you know, I wanted you to do what you were supposed to do, and you didn't do it. So I'm upset, you're going to lose out on everything, you could have had everything, and now you're going to lose out. So then Bil'am decides to turn to him and says, listen, I told you I couldn't do anything else, but now he says, V'atai, hinine olech l'ami, I am going back to my nation, l'cha yatzcha sheyaseh amazeh l'amecha b'chritei yamim. Let me tell you what's going to happen to your nation from this nation in Achrit Yamim in the latter days. Now, Ovid Gemara is going to interpret that phrase to mean something else, but then he goes off to discuss all the nations. One of the nations that he speaks about are Vayaretz HaKeni, Vayisam HaShalav HaYamar, Itan Moshevecha, Vesim Besela Kinecha, which is a very positive statement about the Keni, and that is Amar Lo Bilam Litro, Keni Lo Haita Imanu Boto Haitza. Weren't you a part of the advice or the advisory council of Paro? Who allows you now to sit with the great rocks of history, which is the bracha, which is Eitan Moshevecha v'sim b'sela kinecha, and Eitanim, which the Navi uses in Malachim Aleph, Yerecha Eitanim, which the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah darshins to mean Yerecha Eitanim, Yerech Shel Avot, the great ones are forefathers. There were three people who were in that advisory council to Paro as to what to do with the Jews. They had to come up with a quote-unquote final solution. They needed to deal with the Jews. So he had a council that met. These are the three members of the council. Bilam, Iov, Yitro. All non-Jews who make an appearance in the Torah. Bilam, Sheatz, Neherag. Bilam, who advised him, was killed in the end, meaning that he suffered death because he told them to basically throw the kids into the Yor. Iyov Shishatak, Iyov remained silent, Nidon B'Yisurim. He was punished through afflictions and Yisurim, that's Sefer Iyov. And of course, this is according to the Mandamar that Iyov was Bizman Moshe, which we discussed in the beginning of Bava Batra as to when Iyov, and then as to who wrote Iyov based on when he lived. V'Yitro shibarach, Yitro took off, took flight, Zuchu b'nei b'nav, they shaved b'lishkat ha-gazit. Then his children, or great-grandchildren, his descendants, were meriting to sit in lishkat ha-gazit. This is a pasuk that we just saw back on Kuf Dalet that said the same thing with regards to Yitro, or the descendants of Yitro, and the Keni, which was, u'mimishpechot sofrim yoshvei yabetz, tiratim shimatim, Suchatim with a sin and not a samach. Hema kinim habaim mechamat avi beit rechav. So these are the descendants of the Keni. The Gemara in other places darshins that pasuk to be referencing to mishpachot ha-sofrim, to the Sanhedrin ha-gdola, Yoshve Yaivetz. All of that is darshin in that way. And in that pasuk it mentions the Kenim. And then we bring the pasuk from Shoftim in the beginning of Shoftim, which says, Uvnei Keni chutein Moshe. The Keni were the descendants of the father-in-law of Moshe. Alu Mi'ar Tamarim, they came up from Yericho, and then they settled with Yehuda in Midbar Yehuda, south of Arad. But you see here that the Keni are connected with the Kenim. So now, Bilam is shocked about how the Keni, or what he sees about the Keni in the future, that they're going to have a place amongst the Eitanim, amongst the great ones. They're going to be joined with Bnei Israel. And we see this numerous times. The Keni appear in Sefer Shoftim, in Sefer Shmuel, and they are basically joined at the hip with Bnei Yisrael. It happens by Shirat Devorah. The Keni help out, or basically assist in the killing of Sisera happens by Amalek when Shaul tells the Keni to move out of the way because he's going to destroy Amalek. And so we see them appearing and reappearing numerous times in history and positively associated with Bnei Israel. It all starts from back in the Midbar where Yitro joins Moshe in the Midbar. The question, according to the Rishonim, whether he stayed or he left. But either way, his children stayed with them in the Bnei Keni and in Shoftim, as well as in Yoshua, it indicates that they inherited parts of the land and that they joined Bnei Israel in the land. So Bilam is shocked. You, Yitro, were no different than me. We were both non-Jews, and we were both involved in the advisory council to Paro. How did you end up with such a different end than I am? And the answer is because of the action that he took. Bilam stayed there and counseled Paro to throw the children into the Nile, whereas Yitro took off, took flight, and ran away because he didn't want to have to give that advice or he didn't want to be involved in this decision. So that saved him from the fate of Bilam. Iyov, who was somewhere in the middle, who was silent, didn't object, but didn't acquiesce, he was left with Isurim. Now these are three non-Jews who are mentioned in Tanakh, prominent non-Jews that are mentioned in Tanakh. Iyov has his own Sefer, and Yitro and Bilam are mentioned in the Torah. Here the Gemara has a Mesorah, joins them all together in one bucket, which is this Eitzat de Paro, but you see different outcomes for each of these three characters. So the Gemara is trying to explain the background to why they have different outcomes. Why does one non-Jew end up basically joining Bnei Israel, converting or being a part of Bnei Israel? One of them ends up trying to curse Bnei Israel and then killed by Bnei Israel in a battle. And the other one ends up, obviously as a tzaddik, but suffering tremendous Yisurim. So the Gemara here puts the story together, the background story together, that they were together in that Eitzat de Paro, and their different reactions led to their different outcomes. So then he took up his mashal, he took up his saying, and he said, Oy mi yechye misumo kel. Woe is the one who lives or experiences all that Hashem does, or that which he does. So now, what is that referring to? That's referring to Hashem's coming and redeeming Bnei Yisrael. And then it says, Oy mi yechye. Woe is to the one who lives through that experience when Hashem wants to come and do what he wants, which means that he wants to redeem Bnei Israel. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Oy la luma shetimtza b'sha shekodesh baruch hu oseh pidyon lebanav. Woe to the nation who's in the way when Hashem wants to redeem his nation. Mimi til ksuto ben lavi ludeviya b'sha shenizdakim zeim zeh. Who sticks their cloak between a lion and a lioness when they are mating? I mean, that's not a particularly smart thing to do. You try to get in the way, you're going to get killed in that experience. The same thing here. Of course, Baruch Hu and Bnei Israel compared to a chatan and a kala. And whoever gets in the way of the chatan and the kala getting together will suffer the same fate as the one who sticks his cloak between the lion and the lioness when they're going to mate. Then it continues. Again, these are all the psukim from that final bracha of Bilam. It says, Vitzim miyad kitim ve'inu ashur ve'inu ever v'gamhu adeo ved. So, v'tzim miyad kitim means that the ships shall come from the kitim. The word sim, actually in the modern Hebrew, is also used to mean the navy. The word sim or tzi are for boats or for the navy. Probably also the source for the zim company, shipping company. Amarav, libun aspir. There is actually an alternate girsa, which is libun aspir, or legion aspir. It refers to the armies of the Romans. Vinu ashur, vinu ever, that they will oppress ashur, they will oppress ever. Ad ashur katle miktal, until the time that they complete their conquest of ashur, they will kill. Mikan ve'elech, mishabde shibude. From that point forward, they will subjugate. So the way that Rashi explains it is that when the Romans come, or when this great army comes and conquers, then they will actually kill the Jews that are found in those areas. So until the point that they win the battle or they push back the Assyrians, then the Romans will kill all the Jews they find. From that point forward, once they've taken control and they also are fighting additional battles or side battles, we'll call them, at that point, they will start to subjugate the Jews and not kill them anymore. That's the way that they read it. That there is a cutoff here, which is Tzim Yad Kitim, that it refers to the Roman legions that are coming, or the Roman legions that are brought by boat, and then they are Inu Ashur, Inu Ever. So then the Inu Ashur is up to that point is where they will afflict and kill the Jews. From that point forward, whatever battles they take up or battles that they engage in, they will subjugate the Jews rather than kill them. Hinei Olech Lami, and this is what I quoted you originally, this is the beginning of his statement, Bilam, when he turns to Balak and basically says, let me give you some additional information. Hinei Olech Lami l'chayatzcha sheyaseh amazeh l'amcha, that I'm going to give you advice or let you know what this nation is going to do to your nation. Amcha, they're going to do to your nation. L'amazeh mibayile, it should be to this nation. Basically, the claim of the Gemara is that it is actually opposite what it should have been in the Pasuk. Because the Chi'i Atzcha means that Bilam is offering or proffering advice to Balak. And the assumption is that he's giving advice, like we know, to set up this circumstance in which the Bnei Yisrael are going to be entrapped by the women or the Benot Moav. So, Atzcha, I'm going to advise you what your nation will do to this nation. So that's the way it should have been written, but that's not what it says there. And the pasuk says, "Yatzcha she'asah mazeh," what this nation will do to your nation, which truthfully, the pashtut of pasuk is exactly what it means, which is that he's telling him what's going to be achrit hayamim, how there's going to rise a tremendous king, David HaMelech, who's going to wipe out Moab, who's going to subjugate Moab, and that's what he's speaking about. But the Gemara sees the etzah as being advice. Not simply, let me tell you about the future, but he's trying to advise him about what to do. And therefore they see the pasuk being reversed, which should have said, let me tell you what your nation is going to do to this nation. And that's what the Gemara is asking. It's like a person who curses himself, but he places the klala on others. So he reverses it. It's actually a euphemistic way of dealing with things. The Gemara uses it all the time. It's a literary style. When it says Sonei Yisrael, the haters of Israel, it really means Bnei Yisrael themselves. But when you place the curse, you say something negative, you say it about your enemies. You say it about someone else, because euphemistically, you don't want to say it about yourselves. Rashi over here, Kach Bilam lo ratza litlot shfelut ze b'balak. He didn't want to attribute this debased behavior to Balak. Shehu tzarich levakesh etza hechi kashlu ba b'nei Yisrael. So then he has to ask for advice how to trip up b'nei Yisrael. El b'Yisrael talash shiflut. He connects the debased behavior to b'nei Yisrael. Omar shehein tzrichim le'etza. They need advice. Shehu kashlu ba b'nei Moav. That will trip up b'nei Moav. Shelo titkof yedei Moav ayedei Yisrael. So that Moav will not be overtaken by b'nei Yisrael. V'hainet tichtiv ashiyasam hazel amcha. That's why it's written that way. So Rashi's first interpretation, which he brings from his Mori Rabbi, is that it would be beneath Balak's dignity, in a sense, to seek advice from Bilam, especially the type of advice that he's giving, which is to make their daughters hefker liznut. So here he says, instead of saying it in a manner which would be, let me give you advice, because you sought this advice, he looks at it that Bnei Yisrael sought this debased type of advice, which is advice to let their daughters become zonot. And so he attributes it to Bnei Yisrael. Let me tell you what Bnei Yisrael, or what type of debased behavior they're going to have to your nation. The truth is, it's the other way around. That his nation, the Moab, is going to do this to Bnei Yisrael. That's one way. Lishna achrina, tolekilato b'chaviro, klomar, shetala kotuv klala b'moav. That it's the other way around. This is not about Bil'am. This is about the pasuk itself. The Torah, in its narration of this, changes it around, that puts the klala Moav. Lo ratzeh ktov klapei Yisrael, kamo shemar Bilam arasha. Bilam really gave advice to Moav in order to destroy Bnei Yisrael. When the Torah writes it, it writes it in the reverse, that I'm going to tell you what Bnei Yisrael are going to do to Moav. So then it reverses it, so it looks like Bnei Yisrael are destroying Moav, instead of in truth what Bilam had said, let me give you advice as to how Moav is going to destroy Bnei Yisrael. So the question is, who put that euphemistic statement in there? Is it Bilam made a statement and the Torah made it euphemistic by reversing it so the curse would be on Moab? Or is it the other way around? That Bilam was the one who changed the style and put in what is here because he didn't want to make it the other way around. He wanted to make it euphemistic. So those are the two lishonot that Rashi brings down. So now the Gemara continues with this. Amar lo. So he says to him, Elohehem shalelu sone zimahu. The God of the Jews hates licentious behavior, improper behavior in this area. And the Jews loved these linen garments. It's interesting that he mentions that because Pishtan is associated with Mitzrayim, and Tzemer is going to be associated with Eretz Yisrael. That they love clay Pishtan is interesting because that associates them back with Mitzrayim. That might be because Bnei Yisrael are always complaining about the things they left behind in Mitzrayim. Maybe clay Pishtan is one of those items that they are complaining about, and that's why it's noted over here. Just bringing that up as an aside. Bo basiyacha etza. Let me give you the advice. This is the advice that the Gemara is referring to that they say is in this pasuk euphemistically. Aselahen klaim boshiben zonot. Put up these tents or these stalls and then put these harlots in them. Zekeinami b'chutz, put an elderly woman on the outside. Ve'yalda b'miftim, and a young woman inside. Ve'yimachru lehem klei pishtan, and sell them linen garments. So again, either because of the connection to Mitzrayim, or the fact that they've been traveling in the Midbar for 40 years, which means they don't have access to flax and to linen because they're not planting anything, versus wool, which they have from the sheep that they're taking with them. Aselen klaim mihar sheleg ad beit yishimot. You should set up these stalls all the way from Har Sheleg is the Targum of Sneer, which is the mountain of snow, referring to the Hermon. Set up from your stalls all the way from the Hermon until Beit Yishimot. Koshiben Zonot. Again, place the harlots in them. Zekinabi Bachuz V'yaldab Mibifnim. The older woman on the outside, the younger woman on the inside. Shach Yisrael Ochlim B'Shotim U'Smechim. When they come, eat, drink, and are merry. V'yotzin L'Tayel B'Shok. And then they come out to go buy things in the marketplace. Omerit lo azkena, iata mevakesh klei pishtan. Do you want some linen garments, some linen clothing? Zekena omerit lo bishaveh. She offers the merchandise at fair price, at fair value. V'yalda omerit, the young woman in the tent or in the stall, omerit lo bepachot shtayim v'shalosh pamim. Two or three times this happens, and she offers him, the younger one offers him the merchandise at a much lower price. So of course, who's going to give up a sale? Who's going to give up a deal like that? So they're going to go and buy from the younger woman. So when he comes in to buy from her, she says to him, Hariat keben bayit, you're like a household friend here, you're like a frequent flyer, a VIP customer, shave, baror latzmecha. Sit down and pick whatever you want here. Take the best of whatever you want, and I'll sell it to you. And she has this type of ammonite wine, which was very powerful and very sharp. This is in the period before there was a gzeirah against yayin akum, or stam yayinam, where that you're not allowed to partake of wine from non-Jews. So there's not impermissible. One could drink the wine of a non-Jew. It's not a problem. Obviously, we're not speaking about Yayin Nesech, which is Asur Min HaTorah. We're speaking about the Gzeirah of the Chachamim, or the Taknat Chamim of Stam Yenam, which restricts one from drinking wine that was touched or was involved or produced by a Nachri. And the purpose of that Takanah or Gzeirah was to stop intermingling, which is exactly what happens in this case. Amar lo ritzoncha shetishteh koshel yayin. Well, while you're here looking at the merchandise, let me give you a drink. Let me have some wine. Kevin shishata, once he drinks this wine, which was extremely potent, bier bo, it burns up inside of him and gave him a desire or a draw towards a woman. Amar lo, so then he would propose to the woman, Hashmi ali, listen to me, meaning I want to be together with you. She would pull out her idol from her bosoms. Amarlo avodazeh. Worship this idol. Before you can be together with me, you gotta worship this idol. Amarlo, alo yudiani? I'm Jewish, I can't do that. Amarlo, ma'ichbat lecha? What's the big deal? Klum evakshim imcha lepior? You don't have to do anything here, you simply have to defecate. V'hu enu yodea shavudata b'kach. He didn't know that that's the way they worship this idol. V'lo'od, not only that, I'm not going to let you go, or basically I'm not going to acquiesce to your proposition until you deny the Torah of Moshe, Shenemar. The pasuk says in Hosea, in the description of the sin of Baal Peor, Hema Ba'o Baal Peor, they came to Baal Peor, V'nazru Laboshet, they dedicated themselves to that shame, the Baal Peor, Vayu shikutzim, it's a chaf, you're not a bet, ke ahavam. And they became defiled or abominable like their love. I mean, the love means the idol itself, which was disgusting. They made themselves disgusting like the idol, or they worshiped the idol. They gave themselves up to Baal Peor in order to get what they wanted from the woman. So that is the sin that Bilam advises Moab to generate this whole scenario to draw in the Jewish men and cause them to sin, not only to sin with the Benot Moab, but more importantly to worship Baal Peor in order to get that. And he knows that that's going to work because God hates Zima, and obviously God hates Avodah Zarah, and that's going to result in them being punished. So what he couldn't do with this cursing and what he couldn't do by battle, he ends up doing by seduction and by assimilation. Vayeshev Yisrael b'shitim, B'nei Yisrael were encamped in the Shittim. V'laz Omer Shittim Shema, that's the name of the place where they were encamped. Yeshua Omer Shnitasku b'divrei Shtut, that it's called Shittim, not because that's the real name of the place, but that's because it reflects their behavior. In general, we find that in Tanakh many times, that the name of the place is determined by the activity, the event, or the circumstances that take place there. So that's why you find that the word Beit El might be used numerous times. It may not even refer to the same place. But it has to do with an experience, something that happens there that makes it into Beit El, the place of God, the home of God, Be'er Sheva. We have other experiences like that where you have different events that take place, and then the city is named for the event, even though they're disparate events, because it's common in Tanakh for that to happen. He's suggesting the same thing over here. It's called Shittim because of the shtut, the folly that they engaged in. And then they call up to the people to come and worship their gods. That the women approach them naked. Rabbi Yeshua Amer, Shinasu Kulan Balei Kerin. That all of them became Balei Keri, meaning that this was part of the ploy to attract the men to get involved with the Avodah Zarah, was that the Zonot, or the women, were seductive in nature. So whether they approached them while they were naked, which is the meaning of the word Vatikrena, that they called out to them, or an alternative reading of Vatikrena comes to the word Keri, which is they caused them to become Balei Kerin because of the fact that they were attracting them. The Gemara now jumps tracks, which it does many times in Agadatha, and does some associative things here, which is Maila Shon Bifidim. Bifidim is not relevant to this whole story by Bilam. That's a story by Amalek. But it's making a similar drusha, which is the name of the place, reflects something about the event. Rabbi Lezer Omer, similar to before, Rabbi Lezer says, Bifidim Shema, that's the real name of the place, like he said by Shittim. Rishu Omer, Shiripu Atzman Midivrei Torah, was that they weakened themselves from Divrei Torah, or Rafu Yedehem, which Rashi quotes on Chumash from the word Rifidim, Shenemar Lohifnu Avot Elbanim Mirifyon Yadayim, that the fathers couldn't train to the children because of the weakness of hand, meaning that there was some weakness of Torah, as Rashi says, and mitzvot, and that's what the Rifidim is, a Rifayon Yadayim. It's a weakness that comes from disengagement in Torah and mitzvot, and that's what gives Amalek the access to attack Bnei Yisrael at that time. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol makom shenemar vayeshev, enu elo lashon tzar. Anytime Tanakh uses the term vayeshev, it seems like they are settling down. It seems like there's going to be a quiet time period. It turns out to be just the opposite. And I'll bring you examples. He says, shenemar, our case of here by Bilam, vayeshev Yisrael bashitim. They came and settled down in camp there. This is right before they're about to enter into Eretz Yisrael. It seems like they're getting settled down, getting ready, and the preparations to enter into Eretz Yisrael. They finally made it to the end of their trek, journey through the Midbar of 40 years. And all of a sudden, something goes wrong, which is, again, in Breishit. Finally, Yaakov, after all his travails with Lavan and his travels and Shechem and everything that happened to him and meeting up Esav, finally he gets back and settles down. Ve'eshev Eretz Migurei Aviv, Eretz Kenan, Vayavei Yosef et Dibatam Ra El Aviem. And then all of a sudden Yosef starts bringing bad news or bad rumors about his brothers to his father, and everything deteriorates, and it all starts again when the brothers hate Yosef and end up selling him down to Mitzrayim. V'ne'emar, v'yeshev Yisrael be'eretz Goshen, it shouldn't be Goshen of Eretz, v'yeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim, they settle down in Eretz Mitzrayim, V'yikrevu Yemei Yisrael Lamut. And then all of a sudden, Yaakov, his days approach that he's going to die, or he aged and he's fallen ill. So after they settled in Mitzrayim, finally the whole family's reunited and everybody is excited. Then right away something bad happens, that Yaakov's death approaches quickly. V'yishev Yehuda v'Yisrael lebetach, ish tachet gafano v'tachet teinato. This is in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, is at the peak, the zenith of the kingdom of Yehuda, the kingdom of David and Shlomo. And so after the settling and the expanse of the nation is increased significantly under David and Shlomo HaMelech, it says everybody is relaxed. They are all living, every person under their own grapevine and under their own fig tree. And everybody is happy and settled and has a great place to live and has what parnasa to make. All of a sudden, Hashem brings people to bother Shlomo, to make it difficult for Shlomo. Et Hadad Ha'adomi, Mizera Melech Hu Be'adom. Hadad Ha'adomi, where Edom then throws off the yoke which David had placed on them. He had subjugated them and rid themselves of the king's lineage. Here somebody of the king's lineage returns and causes problems for him. He was also in exile in Mitzrayim, similar to Yerubam. And he comes back, and insurrection that throws off the yoke that David HaMelech had placed on them. Ve'et Malchei Midyan hargu al chalaleihem, et Bilam ben Beor hargu b'chorev. So here in the battle with Midyan later on, when Bnei Yisrael take revenge what happened with the Bnot Moav, in that battle it says that Bnei Yisrael killed not only the Malchei Midyan, they also killed Bilam ben Beor. He's killed in that battle. So now, Bilam, my boy, Hotam. Why is Bilam over there? That's not his nation. That's not where he's from. What's he doing over there? Yochanan Shalakli told Skar Esrim Ba'arba Elef Shepil Me Yisrael. He went to get paid back the 24,000 for the 24,000 Jews that he killed. He wasn't successful with the Klala, so he's going to get paid then. But his advice, the counsel that he gave about this note, worked. So now he wants to get paid for 24,000 Jews that got killed in the plague because of what happened with the Bnot Moav. Amar Zutra Batuvia Amarav, Hainu Damrinche, that is the colloquial expression, Gamla Azla Limibe Karne, the camel goes to search for its horns, Udne Davule Gazizin Mine, they cut off the ears that he has. So the camel obviously doesn't have horns, so he's searching for the horns that are missing, and while he's going to search for the horns, his ears get cut off. So he goes to find something that was lost, and instead of gaining that thing, he loses something else. Similarly over here, Bilam went to collect his payment, so he went to collect or find something that he was missing, the money that he supposedly deserved, and instead of getting the money, he ends up dead because he ends up in the middle of the battle with Bnei Yisrael, and he's killed by the sword, he's killed in that battle. And again, the Chazal and other places speak about the Midah Keneged Midah, which is that Bilam took up the arms of Bnei Yisrael, which is the Peh, and Tfilah, and Torah. So he took that up in order to be Mekalel them. He dies by Bnei Yisrael's sword, which is the weapon of Esav, or the weapon of the other nations. So at the Midah Keneged Midah, he tried to usurp the power of Bnei Yisrael and use it against them. Bnei Yisrael used his power, the Cherev, against him. And so he dies by the Cherev. As well as the Gemara brings in other places that Bilam was involved in the battle, that he was helping the Malchei Midyan to float in the air, or fly up in the air with the Shem Hashem. And so that there's a battle beyond the battle of the Cherev, that he's killed and they have to stop him from using these powers of the Shem Hashem. So then it becomes a battle of the Shem Hashem between Moshe and Bilam, in that way where they have to take out Bilam because he's using those powers that he has as a Navi. Ved bin Am ben Beor ha-kosem. In Sefer Yoshua, when it's describing the properties or the areas that Yoshua had conquered and Moshe had conquered and distributed to the Shvatim, over there it mentions Ved Bilam ben Beor ha-kosem. Bilam ben Beor, the soothsayer, they killed. You'll see in a second, and the top of the next Amud is the remainder of the Pasuk. Kosem, why does it call him a soothsayer? Navihu, he was a Navi. Why is he calling him a soothsayer? I'm Rabbi Yochanan Bitzchila Navi, Ulusov Kosem. In the beginning, he was a prophet. In the end, he turned out to be a soothsayer, meaning that he got downgraded. He, at the first, had a semblance of prophecy, and he was able to see the future, speak about the future, speak to God or communicate with God. Later on, after he abused it or misused it, Then he was downgraded, and then he could all he could do was be a kosem, be a soothsayer. Whether you say that that's because he was trying to be mechavein the Shah when God got angry, maybe that's a possibility. That's why he was called a kosem, because he wasn't using his nevuah. He was trying to use or line up the time period, which the kosamim do. They try to, soothsayers, they have incantations. They have inauspicious times. They try to align all these things to make things work. So maybe that's what the Gemara is referring to in terms of being a kosem. Or I could refer to later on, that after he was originally a Navi and people came to seek his counsel and use his advice, when he lost that connection to God, they still came to him, but he had to do it through the dark powers rather than the powers of Nevuah. I'm Rapapa, I know Damra Inche. Rapapa, again and again throughout the Gemara here, says the colloquialisms. He didn't bring the last one we had, but he's brought most of the ones that we've seen so far. That is like the common saying or the folk saying, Masganei Vishilte Havai. I was a princess to the great ones. Aizen the Gavre Nagre. And now I have let myself go to the, Rashi brings two interpretations. One of Nagre is Moshkei Chevel Spina, to the ones who pull the ropes of the boats. Whether that means that they work on the docks and they rope the boats in, or whether that means they are walking up river pulling the boats with the ropes. Or Nagre also means a Harashim, means a carpenter. Or in essence, what happens is that she originally was a princess together with royalty, and then she's Mizaneh with some lowlife, somebody who is not even close to royalty. That this woman was from a family of royalty, she was a princess, and now she is consorting with some lowlife, it doesn't make any sense, meaning that someone of such high stature should not be involved with someone of such lowly stature. So similarly, Bilam, originally he was together with God, he was a Navi, and then he's Mizaneh, meaning that he glows off to something way beneath that which he was before. Again, whether that's because he lost his nevuah, or whether that's because he was trying to accomplish something that he wasn't accomplishing with his nevuah, so he went to be a kosem to see if he could accomplish it as a kosem. The Yad Ramah actually has an alternate view of what this is, which is an expression that basically says people can't retire from their professions. Once in a professional, they're always a professional. And the expression is a woman who's married to a warrior who carries weapons can't forfeit that. She always wants to marry again someone who has weapons. If she can't find someone with weapons, then she finds a carpenter who still has utensils that are made out of iron or steel because it resembles or has semblances of that what she had before. And similarly, if he can't be a Navi like he was before, he engages in the area of Kusain in order to be like or assimilate or be at least some semblance of what he was before. So now here's a continuation of that pasuk in Yoshua, which says that Bet Bilam ben Beor ha-kosem, and then it continues Hargu b'nei Yisrael b'cherev el chalaleihem. It's very similar to the pasuk in Bamidbar that describes that in the battle with Midian, which is Hargu b'nei Yisrael b'cherev, that he was killed by the sword el chalaleihem amongst the others that were slain at that time. Amarav, what does it mean, el chalaleihem in the plural? They killed Bilam. So what's chalaleihem in the plural? So Amarav, shikimu bo arba mitot. He got all four death penalties. Skila, Srefa, Hereg, Vefenek. They did all four of those to him. And the Marsha notes that they learned it out of the word B'nai Yisrael, which seems extraneous over here because, of course, B'nai Yisrael are the ones who killed him. And so they say, Hargu B'nai Yisrael, is that they killed him the way that a Jew would be killed in mitot of Beit Din. Rashi takes this very literally and explains how they did that. He says, Mitot harbe mashma shetalu'uhu. First of all, they hung him up. Ve'itzitu eish tachat atzliva. And then under the noose of the gallows, they lit a fire. Ve'chatchu rosho. And then they cut off his head. Ve'nafal l'toch eish. And then he fell into the fire. And Rashi explains, tliya, the hanging is the equivalent of chenek. The chatichat arosh is like hereg. The Nafal La'aretz is like Skila, where they push him off the building. And Shnafal La'ur, Ainu Sreifa, when he fell into the fire, that's burning by Sreifa. So Rashi comes up with a mechanism by which he was able to get all four deaths in this approach. He takes the Gemara very literally in that way. But the idea being that Bilam had to suffer for the tremendous pain and difficulties that he causes B'nai Yisrael. First of all, the misuse of the nevuah that he was given from Hashem. And beyond that, the fact that he tried, even after that, knowing that Hashem didn't want this, he tried to cause the death of many from Bnei Yisrael. Amaleyahu mina the Rabbi Chanina. So this means, says Rabbi Chanina, Mishmielach Bilam bar kama havo. Did you ever hear how old Bilam was when he was killed? Amalei michtav loktiv. He says it's not written explicitly in the Torah, which we know. But I can surmise it from the pasuk in Tehillim, Anshei damim u'mirma lo yechetsu yemehem, that people who are of blood and deceit, they will not live half of their lives. Now we know from Imig Verot, Shmonim Shana, that a person lives Shivim Shana 70 years, and if he's really good, he lives 80 years. So the standard life that the Chazal saw was a 70-year life. So if a person's not going to reach half their life when they are Anshei damim u'mirma, 35 is half of 70, that means he won't reach 35. By Tlatim et Tlatshnin or by Tlatim Barba, he was 33 or 34 when he was killed, because then that would be Mikayim the Pasuk, that someone of Anshei damim u'mirma won't reach half of their lifespan.
Obviously, as Rashi knows, this argues on Rabbi Simai, who before said that there were three people involved in the council to Paro, which would have meant that he lived for an extended period of time, which is not borne out by the fact that he died at 33 or 34 years old.
Amalei, Shapir Kamart, what you're saying is right. I found Bilam's, I don't know if you call it his passport, his notes, his diary, and it's written in there, Bilam Chagira, that Bilam was 33 years old. Bilam, the one who limped or who was unable to walk. We saw it in yesterday's daf, that he was Shefi, that he had dislocated hip, and that he did not walk properly. Kad Katil Yate Pinchas Lista. When he was killed by Pinchas the marauder or the robber, that's a reference to Pinchas, who's the general of the army who leads the battle against Midian. He was appointed by Moshe to lead the battle. So that doesn't mean that Pinchas himself personally killed him, but it means that whoever killed him is attributed to the general of the army. It's attributed to Pinchas because he's the one who leads the army. Or you could argue that it was Pinchas himself because, as I said before, there was a battle of the Shem Hashem. So they might have required the tzitz, they might have required something else to fight the Shem Hashem that he was using, and then it might have been Pinchas himself that was doing it. So Amalei Marbrei the Ravina the Brei. So my Ravina says to his son, Bekulo lo tafis the Midrash. Don't extend whatever you have here with regards to the individuals mentioned in our Mishnah. The individuals in our Mishnah who are not Bnei Olam Haba, don't try to darshan or add on to those drashot more negative things that you can dig up about those individuals. Levarmi Bilam Arasha. With the exception of Bilam, Tekama de Mishkachat Bei Drosh Bei. The more you find, the better. Now that might relate to what we saw yesterday, which was that Dorshei Rishimot said that all of the people in our Mishnah get Olam Haba, meaning that the Mishnah is wrong, we disagree with that, and we think they get Olam Haba. But we saw that Dorshei Rishimot only enumerated six people. Our Mishnah enumerates seven that don't get Olam Haba. The only person that they didn't argue about was Bilam. So that's number one. Number two is Bilam, we know out of that list there, is the only non-Jew that's in the list. And so for a combination of those reasons, it might be that what Marbar Ravina is saying to his son, listen, I don't add on because whatever Chazal gave us we have, but you don't have a right to go and then degrade or make negative statements about these other individuals. It's only because Chazal told us that we have that Mesorah, but you can't add on to it. With Bilam, it's carte blanche because of what he did and the fact that he was killed and the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu addresses him in Micha and speaks about him, that gives you a carte blanche to say whatever you want to say or make any drashot that are negative. You can add on to that which Chazal said. Okay, now we're moving back to the enumeration of the Hedyotot. Like it did by the Malachim, by the kings, it goes through each one of them and explains. So we just finished the section on Bilam, and now the next one of the Hedyotot, lay people that is not Olam Haba, is Doeg. Doeg Edomi. The Gemara says, K'tiv Doeg, Uchtiv, when it says Doeg in the Navi, it's written as Dalet Vav Yud Yud Gimel. So even though his name is Doeg, it has Doeg in it, or it's written that way. In the beginning, Hashem was sitting and worrying. Maybe this individual is going to go down a bad path. I mean, Doeg, we're going to see in a second, was a big Talmud Chacham. He was close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and God was worried that maybe he would deviate from the path. L'achar sheyatza, once he left the path, he went astray. Amar vai sheyatzazeh. Whoa, this one has left. And so there you see in the name of Doeg, when it's written that way, it's written Dalet Vav Yud Yud Gimel, it has the word vai in it, to tell you that God at that point said, whoa, once he went off that derech and went to the bad path, God says, whoa, it's so terrible about what happened. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk in this Tehillim? Matitalel bera'ah ha'gibor. Why would you boast about your evil, the strong man? Chesed keel kol hayom. The kindness and the righteousness of God lasts forever. So then why would you get excited about evil if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who chesed is forever? So it's the opposite or opposition to that what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. So Amar lo Kadosh Baruch Hu l'dueg. Lo gibor b'torata? Aren't you a great Talmud Chacham? Matit alel bera. Why are you getting excited? Why are you getting engaged in bad behavior and the evil? Why should you boast about that, or why should you make that your mark? Lo chesed keel natoy alecha kol hayom? Isn't the chesed of a Kadosh Baruch Hu upon you all day? So that's the idea that a person who learns Torah, chuchid chesed mashuch alav, and a person learns Torah, there's a chesed or a sort of chain or favor that person has because of the Torah he learns. And same thing over here. He says, aren't you engaged in Torah all day? Aren't you a Talmud Chacham? So why is it that you are going down this path? Rabbi Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what is meant in the Pasuk? Ulurasha marlukim, malacha l'saper chukai. To the evil one, God says, who are you to declare my statutes? Amarlo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Doeg HaRasha, malacha l'saper chukai. So he sees that as referencing to a Doeg HaDomi. What is it your right to speak in my Torah? Shata magia l'pashat menatzchim, pashat misaper l'shon ra, ma ata doresh pem. In essence, what Hashem is saying is you're a hypocrite. You learned all this Torah, and you're now going to get to the parsha of menatzchim, of killers. Get to the parsha of those that speak lashon hara, and that's what you got engaged with. You told lashon hara about David to Shaul. You are the one who killed out Nov Ira Kohanim. You're a murderer. You are a misafer lashon hara. And so how could you be the one learning Torah? You've become a hypocrite now. You can't be the one who learns Torah or becomes the representative of God anymore. Very similar to what Yeshayahu says in Perek Aleph, what we read for the Torah on Shabbat Chazon, Yadechem damim aleyu, that your hands are covered in blood, and then you're bringing all your korbanot to bring all those things to worship Hashem. Hashem says, I'm not interested. You guys don't take care of other people. You kill other people, oppress those that are downtrodden. I don't want those people because you're a hypocrite. And similar over here. If you're going to be engaged in this type of behavior, I don't want you in my Beit Midrash. I don't want you giving over my Torah. Malachal esaper chukai. Vatisa briti alei picha. And you take my covenant in your mouth. Again, a continuation of the pasuk that we just read. Amar Rabami, ein torato shel doeg, ela misafa ulachutz. So the Gemara here, then, based on this, comes back and explains something about doeg, which is self-evident because of what happened. That doeg's Torah was only from his lips outward, meaning that it was lip service, it never reached his heart. It did not impact him. And this is the important aspect of Torah. That a person's ben adam lemakom has to be heartfelt. It has to be not something where a person is discharging obligations or doing something in order to present a face to the public or present himself as being religious or whitewash what he's doing. It has to be something that penetrates the individual. A person who learns Torah has to be a different person after they learn Torah than before they learn Torah. Torah has to affect the individual. If it does not permeate, does not affect the individual, then you're going to get results like Doeg HaDomi, which is someone who is a great Talmud Chacham, yet he speaks Lashon Hara. He's a murderer. He does all these things. The same thing again as Yeshayahu Aleph. All these people bringing Korbanot and doing all these things, Ben Adam Lamakom, but their Ben Adam Achero is nowhere to be found. And that's an indication that the Torah is not impacting the individual. It's not making the individual a different person. That's what's being said here, that it's all external. It never makes an internal imprint on the individual. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what's meant in this Perek Tehillim? We quoted it before, but the opening refrain in this Perek Tehillim is about Doeg HaDomi. So this whole Perek Tehillim is about Doeg HaDomi. We read that before, Matit Alel Bara Gibor. Now, Ve'iru Tzadikim Ve'irau, the Tzadikim will see it, and they will tremble, they'll be fearful, Ve'alav Yisargu, and then they will laugh at him. B'tichila yirau, In the beginning, they will tremble and be fearful. And in the end, they will laugh. As Rashi notes over here, tzaddikim, hayu yireim, tzaddikim were worried, shelo yilamed adam mimasav shel doeg, that people should not learn from doeg how to behave. Sholeich v'oteo matzliach. He was successful, he was a big Talmud Chacham, and he's doing these things, so people are going to emulate his behavior. It's always a great fear, which is people who are steeped in Torah, who seemingly are leaders and Talmidei Chachamim, strong ben adam l'makom, people start to follow them. But then if they do the wrong things, and if they are debased in their behavior, people then follow them, not only in their ways ben adam l'makom, but also their ways ben adam l'chaveiro. It causes huge problems. So that's Doeg HaDomi. He's a successful warrior in Shaul's army. He's had a high political position, and yet his behavior is deplorable. So the Pei HaChachamim were worried. They were fearful that people would follow his lead. In the end, when he dies, B'chatzi Yamav, when he dies early, when he dies, and we haven't said this yet, but it's going to be the same pasuk we brought by Bilam, which is, Lo Yechetzu Yemehem, that those that are Anshid Damim and Mirma will not live out half their lifetime. Gemara is going to bring a singular agadita soon about Doeg. So when he died early, then people got the message that he wasn't so good and that he wasn't really who he projected himself to be. So I'm Rabbi Yitzchak, my dictive. What's meant in the pasuk? Chayo bala vayikiana, that he swallowed great riches and then he expunged it, he vomited it out. Mibitno yorishenu kel. God will cause it to be cast out from his innards. Amar David lifnei Kodesh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shalom, Yamut Doeg. Doeg should die. You should take him out. He's given me such trouble, such difficulty. You should get rid of him. Amalo, Chayol Bala, V'yikeno. He swallowed great riches. He was involved in Torah. He took in tremendous Torah. V'yikeno, we have to wait for him to expunge it, to have it be removed from him, and then he will die. Amar lefanav, so David says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no, Yerushenu Kel. Hashem should cause it to be cast out, meaning that you should accelerate that process and have him remove it actively rather than just waiting for it to disappear by itself. What Hashem says is, let him forget his Torah, and then when he's weakened because he no longer has the protection of the Torah, then he's going to die. So what Hashem says to David HaMelech is, let it go its natural course. You want Doeg to die because all the problems he's causing you, the difficulties that he's causing for you, he will die of his own problems, which is that he's stopping to learn Torah, he's forgetting to learn Torah, and that will weaken him. So David responds to him and says, you know what? Can you accelerate it? Can you cause him to forget his Torah? So that will weaken him and then he will die. So David is not satisfied or does not suffice for the fact that his Torah being lost will then weaken him and he'll die. He wants Hashem to accelerate it, to cause it to be lost quicker, so that he can get rid of Doeg HaDomi, who's obviously causing David tremendous difficulty. God will destroy you eternally or forever. I'm going to read the continuation of the pasuk in a second. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu David, Netei Doeg Ba'almudate. All right, I agree with you. Doeg is going to be taken out. He's going to be removed from the scene over here. Again, we're quoting Tehillim Nun Bet, which is about Doeg HaDomi. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Doeg is going to be wiped out. But should he be wiped out forever? The Netzach, which means, should he come to Olam Haba? Amar Lefanav, Gam Kel Itatzcha LeNetzach. Also, God, you should wipe him out forever, destroy him forever. Meaning, David is saying, not only should he be killed here, he should lose his Olam Haba. My dichtiv. Then the pasuk continues. Yachtucho. Hashem will take you away. Visachecha. Pluck you out. Me ohel. From your dwelling place. Vishereshcha mi eretz chayim sela. And uproot you or root you out from the land of the living. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Limrush maitata be midrusha mishmei. Okay. So far you got. He's going to be killed. He's going to die here. Not only is he going to die because he forgot his Torah, but you're going to accelerate it because that you asked for. Then you said, no Olam Haba. Fine, no Olam Haba. What about the fact that people will say over Torah in his name? Amar lefanav, yachtecha visachecha me'ol. That you should be taken away or plucked out of the O.L. The O.L. shell Torah. And that his name should be erased from the O.L. shell Torah. It shouldn't be anything quoted in his name. Lahavilei b'nin rabbanan. Let him have children who are tamidei chachamim, who are successful rabbanan. You should uproot him or root him out of the land of the living In essence, what he's saying is, and we've noted this a number of times, that a person's children are basically the continuation of them. So if his children are Tamidei Chachamim, then in essence he's Be'eretz HaChayim, he's still living. He's in the land of the living because he has children that are carrying on the ways of the Torah. David says, uproot him. Don't let that happen as well. This also goes or connects to the Agadah that we saw yesterday, where Malachim asked Kodesh Baruch Hu, in the Dorshei Rishimot, when they say all these people get Olam Haba, in the end it says, how are you going to explain that to David HaMelech? It says, if you let Doeg into Olam Haba, how are you going to deal with David HaMelech, who was the Yoshvei Peleshet, the one who killed out the Plishti? How are you going to deal with that? Kodesh Baruch Hu answers, Hitra A'u, that I'll make them Re'im. I'll have to work it out. I'll have to appease them. I'll have to do something to work it out between David and Doeg. But that, obviously, in the back of the minds, is based on this Agadah over here, where David specifically asks that Doeg not get Olam Haba. So if you darshan the Pasuk like the Dorshei Rishimot, that Doeg gets Olam Haba, that's against what David wanted. If that's the case, then Agadah's going to have to reconcile with David. David's telling him no Olam Haba, and Agadah in the end grants him Olam Haba. And that's why it says there, that God's going to have to make some sort of reconciliation between them, because otherwise David is not accepting of the fact that Doeg should get Olam Haba. What is meant by the Pasuk in Yeshayahu? And for those of you who did Bahab this morning, we read in the second Slicha exactly this Pasuk from Yeshayahu. Libcha yegeima, your heart should tremble in fear. Aye sofer, where's the scribe? Aye shukel, where's the receiver? Aye sofer the migdalim, where's the one who counts the towers? Aye sofer, where's the one who counts kol leotiot shebetorah, knows every letter in the Torah? He knows or weighs all the different kal v'chomers that are in the Torah. Ayeh sofer the migdalim. Ayeh sofer shlosh meot halachot psukot b'migdala poreach b'avir. That he put together 300 halachot that are defined by a migdal that is floating in the sky. Over here, Rashi brings three different interpretations as to what it means, this migdala poreach b'avir. All of these are referenced to Doeg and Doeg's tremendous erudition in Torah. And Yeshayahu was saying, Ayeh, what happened to this? What happened to this? What happened to this? Now, whether that's bemoaning the fact after the fact, what happened to his great Torah after he went down the evil ways, or the other way around? It's a rhetorical question about how could he be done this, or how could he go this way when he has all of this behind him? You could look at it in either way. But again, it's an accolades to Doeg about his tremendous erudition, but in a sense, questioning how did he end up going this different path when he had all of this under his belt. So now, again, what is Migdal Poreach B'Avir? If you look at Rashi, top on the left side, says, Mitagel Yonah Shalamala Min Alamed. The tag that is above, the crown that is above the Lamed, V'nebra Kufalamata. Why is it bent a little bit downward? Lashon Mori Mipi Hashmua. So he says, that's what my Rebbe told me, and he has that from the Misorah, that what it's speaking about here, Migdal Poreach Bavir, is the top of the Lamed. The top of the Lamed, instead of going straight up, comes up at an angle. So that's what it was speaking about. Lishnachrina, Migdal Poreach Bavir, Anichnas Eretz Amim. This is a Mishnah, as well as a Tosef, that's quoted by the Gemara numerous times, when it deals with Tumat Eretz Amim, which is, what happens if a person enters Eretz Amim without touching the ground? Are you Tamei? So that was the question. Is it Tuma because of the land itself? Or is there Tuma even in the Avir, in the airspace? So if you enter in the airspace, in a Sheda, Teva, and Migdal, what's the story? Or even if you think the airspace is Tamei, if you're encapsulated or enclosed, does that protect you from the Tuma? So that's what it means, Migdal Poreach B'Avir. Migdal that's floating through the air, I mean it doesn't touch the ground. So what's the din there? Imu Tamei Imlav. Lishna Achrina is the third approach. That is a type of sorcery, Lamid Migdal Bavir, that can suspend a tower in the air. Kagon, similar we had earlier in the Masechta, Shlosh Meot Ilchot Benitiot Kishuin, Pepirkin Dedal, back on Samechet, when it says that they knew the Alachot about harvesting and planting fields with zucchinis or gourds, that was all illusions or sorcery, they knew how to do that. Ulamori Nira. And now you have a fourth one, Dahi Garcina. This is the Girsa. Shlosh Meot Alachot Migdal Omeid Be'avir. It is 300 Alachot about a Migdal that stands in the air. Umishnah Achat Be'olot. It's referencing to one Mishnah in Olot. Demishtai behochi, that's speaking about this case, migdalo made bavir. When you have an ohel that is suspended, what is the din of that oil? Bituma betocha, bekelim shibtocha tmeim, the tuma in it, and that which is inside it are tmeim, bechein nira l'rabi. So what he's saying is that that one mishnah in olot, he had 300 different halachot that emanated from it. That he won one mishnah, he had 300 different panim or ways to look at it or to discuss it. So any one of those items, obviously, they're all things that are either of minute detail or something that requires tremendous erudition. All of these are complements to the Torah of Doeg HaDomi. And then Amar Rabbi, Arma Ma'ea Baye Bo Adoeg V'Achitofel Migdal Poreach Bavir. That Doeg HaDomi and Achitofel, both of which lost their Olam Abba, both of which the Gemara considers them to be leading Tamidei Chachamim, tremendous learners of Torah. So both of them, they had 400 questions about a Migdal Poreach Bavir, V'lo Ifshet Lo Chad. And not a single one of them was answered. I mean, there were such strong questions, or there were such strong suppositions that nobody could undermine them or answer them. Here again, Migdal Poreach Bavir would be subject to the same four different possibilities that Rashi raised before. Amarava Rabuta the Mibai Bai. Rabbi says, is it really a chiddush to ask questions? Just because you ask a lot of questions, or just because you learned a lot of Torah, doesn't mean that you're anything special. And this is such an important principle that Rava lays out over here, which is that quantity is not always the answer to success in Torah, or it does not necessarily belie what type of person we are speaking about. B'shnei de Rav Yehuda, in the years of Rav Yehuda, kulei tenuye ben Zikin, they only learned Seder Nezikin. In Mishnayot, in Gemara, they only learned Seder Nezikin. They were very limited in what they learned. Ba'anan, in our generation, Rabbi says, Kamat Nitan, Tuva, Be'uksin. There are plenty of people learning Uksin, which is at the end of Seder Tarot, or you can see over here, Sidrei Uksin, or others say, Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. We're involved in all areas of Torah, and that's not just one person, that's many people. Bichava Mati Rabbi Yehuda, and when Rabbi Yehuda reached this Mishnah, Isha Shukuveshet Yerek Biktera, a woman who pickles or cooks the Yerek in a pot, it could be that this has to do with pickling, and there are Mishnayot or Teseftot that deal with this, which is, what is the status of that Yerek if it's Yerek Shvi'it? Other issues that come up with the Yerek in these situations. But here Rashi indicates that he thinks it's a reference to the case of Uksin. Since we just mentioned Uksin before, this is a Mishnah in Tarot that is connected to this idea of Uksin, which is Yad. And Uketz is the stem from which the fruit is detached from the tree. And we have a principle in Tumah, which is something that is useful to the fruit or the vegetable becomes a Yad, an extension or a Shomer, a protector of the fruit. If it is a Yad or Shomer for the fruit, if Tumah touches that Yad or Shomer, it conveys the Tumah to the fruit or the object itself. If it's considered to be extraneous or not necessary for to hold the fruit or to preserve the fruit, then it does not convey Tumah. So over here, if the Yerek is already being cooked in the pot, then the leaves that are around it are not necessary anymore, or that which is around it or the Oketz are not inherently necessary for the fruit or the vegetable anymore. They don't preserve it. You don't need to hold it with it anymore. And therefore, Tumah cannot be conveyed through them. And that's the Mishnah that this is referencing to. Yishah shekoveshet yerek bigdeira. Bamila, and some say zeitim shekavshan bitir fehen. Some say that we're talking about olives that were either pickled or cooked with their leaves. Tehorim, they are tahor. They are not considered to be yad, or extensions of the item, and therefore they're not mekabel tumah through those objects. Amar avayot Rabbi Shmuel kazina ocha. Rabbi Yehuda over here says about that Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda remembers a Talmid of both Rav and Shmuel, and he says about that Mishnah that this reminds me of the difficult questions of Rav and Shmuel, in that he didn't completely understand the Mishnah, he couldn't get into the depth of this Mishnah. We have 13 yeshiva learning uksin, meaning that we're experts in uksin compared to Rabbi Yehuda. And look at the difference between us. Rabbi Yehuda, shalif, mesane, v'ata mitra. Rabbi Yehuda, if he was going to be gozera tanit, in order to bring rain, as soon as he untied his shoe, in order to take his shoe off, the rain started. That's how great he was. Vanan, Tzvachina, and the Lech of the Mishkachban. We scream and cry and shry, we daven away, and nobody answers us. So he says, you can't prove anything to me from the quantity of Torah. In our generation, we are learning significantly more Torah than that of Rav Yehuda. We learn more Siddarim, we have more expanse in Torah, we understand it better, we have more yeshivot, and yet, look what happens. Rav Yehuda takes off his shoe, it rains, we daven, and nothing happens. Ella Kodesh Baruch Hu Liba Boi. Hashem wants the heart. It all has to do with the intent of the person, the depth of the person. And this is what we've been saying all along, that if Torah is simply superficial in nature, does not penetrate the individual, is not a part and parcel of the individual, then you have a serious issue with that Torah, and it will not bring the same type of development of character and unique persona that Rabbi Yehuda was. Rabbi Yehuda learned less Torah and had more difficulty in the Torah, yet he was a greater person because of his heart. And he was into the Torah and how the Torah affected him versus the generation of Rava, where they're learning tremendous amounts of Torah, but it's just not penetrating and their hearts are not into it. This also has to do with the issue of Lishma, which is Shalom Lishma, Ba Lishma. But reaching that point of Lishma is the ultimate goal. But Lishma takes out all the personal interests and the ulterior motives that a person has in learning of Torah and experiencing the Torah, and it makes the person one with Torah. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, and that's when you get results. So Rava says all these compliments about Doeg, Achitofel, how much they learned, how many questions they asked, that doesn't prove anything to me. It doesn't show me that they were really Tamidei Chachamim, because it's all about the heart. And we see from their behaviors that it's clear they didn't have their hearts in it, because their behavior was in opposition to or at odds with what they were learning. And so that shows you that they were not so involved or so heartfelt in their learning. It's the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. No coincidence that the Gemara is bringing it in this context. It is the pasuk that Hashem says to Shmuel when he goes to anoint the king or the new king that's going to replace Shaul from amongst the children of Yishai. And he goes from child to child, and God says to him, what are you doing? You're looking at all the externalities and superficialities. Hashem wants the heart. Hashem, look into the heart. And you're missing the point. The people that you're thinking who are going to be the ones to be anointed are the wrong ones, because you're not looking into the heart. And that's what Hashem wants. And that's a reference to David HaMelech. And so the Gemara brings that as in opposition, almost in contrast, to Doeg and Achitofel, who were missing the heart. They had the Torah without the heart, and David has the heart. And that's what makes the difference between David and Melech and them, even though they might have had more Torah knowledge in terms of their quantitative, as maybe even qualitative learning. Nevertheless, the heart is what matters. Amar Visharshio, Doeg v'Achitofel lo avi savre shmaitzito. Doeg and Achitofel couldn't explain things. They weren't able to articulate properly what was going on in the Torah. Matkiv la Marzutra. Marzutra challenges that statement. Mandich dibbe ayeh sofer, ayeh shokel, ayeh sofer et amigdalim. The puzzle that we just quoted from Yeshayah, we tashed it about Doeg. You tell me they don't know how to present their Torah, they don't know how to organize it? Here we have a pasuk that we dash about Doeg that says that he was amazing at this. He had tons and tons of knowledge in this area. The thing is that even though they were tremendous and their erudition was great and their Torah understanding was great, yet they never ended up lining up or aligning with what was the halacha. That their sayings or their positions weren't accepted the halacha. And we saw this earlier, that is a unique quality or a gift from Hashem. Dichtiv sod Hashem le'reyav. That the secret of Hashem is to those that fear Him, that it takes a unique person that Hashem grants that favor to and is empowered to have that, that they say things and they're, what they say is accepted by halacha. Not only are they amazing in their erudition, not only do other people respect their Torah and listen to their Torah, but their psak halacha and their Torah is accepted by halacha, and that requires a shkocha pratit, and that they were missing, both Doeg and Achitofel. Amar Rabbi Ami, lo mei Doeg asher shachach talmudo. Doeg didn't die until he forgot his learning. That's what was we brought from the pasuk before about the fact that Hashem says, wait for him to lose his Torah in the pasuk in Iyov, and then he'll die. Shenemar hu yamut be'ein musar uberov yivalto yishke. He will die because of his lack of instruction, In the greatness of his folly, he'll be led astray. So you see that the only way he can die is if he's lacking in Musar and instruction, he's lacking in his Torah. So the lack of Torah knowledge, his foolishness, that's what brings him to go astray and brings him to his death. So it must be that he forgot his Torah, and that's why he died. Rav Amar Nitzara, that he got Sarat. Shnemar, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, it's mata kozone mimecha, that all those that go astray from you shall be destroyed. Now the word hitzmata is what the Gemara is playing on here. What does it mean, destroyed? Tivotam litzmitut. Vayikra uses the term smitut. Umitargamina nechalutin. So it uses the term smitut. Over there it's talking about the sale of a house in a walled city, that will be a permanent sale. And so therefore it uses the term smitut to mean permanent. Over there the targum, the translation into Aramaic is the chalutin. That it will be forever, permanent. Vitznan. And we have by Tzorat, Ein ben Muzgar umuchlat ela priya ufrima. The only difference between someone who's locked up to see if they're Tamei Tumat Tzorat versus someone who is decisively decided that he does have Tumat Tzorat, the difference between them is priya ufrima, the requirement that they rent their garments and that they let their hair grow out and become disheveled. So there you see that the word muchlat is associated with Tzorat. So in this Agadic Gezerah Shavah, we'll call it, or association, the word hitzmata, which is connected to tzmitut. Tzmitut is translated in Aramaic as chalutin. We see in the Mishnah, the word chalut is associated with tzarat. And therefore, he must have died by tzarat, because those that go astray are destroyed by Hashem. Tzmitut must be through tzarat. Rav Yochanan, shlosha malachei chavalat nizdamnu lo ledoeg. There were three destroying malachim that showed up to Doeg. Echad sheshikach talmudo. One of them caused him to forget his learning, because that's what opened him up to the possibility of being killed or dying. Echad sisaraf nishmato. One of them that burnt his neshama. That's what we said before, that he does not get olam haba. David requests that he doesn't get olam haba. Echad shepizer afro bebeit tikneisi otubat midrashot. That one that sprinkles his ashes all over the Bate Midrashot, the Bate Knesiot. I don't know whether that's to teach a lesson and to say that everybody should take heed and a lesson from this individual, that learning Torah requires more than simply learning Torah. One has to be engaged, one has to be heartfelt in their Torah learning, otherwise you can end up like Doeg. I'm not sure if that's what the meaning is, or the meaning is this disbursement that he will never return, meaning that even his children will never return. The only thing that will reach the Bate Knesiot and Bate Midrashot are his ashes, no one else. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Doeg v'Achitofel l'ra'u ze et ze. They never saw each other, they were never together. Doeg b'mei Shaul, v'Achitofel b'mei David. Doeg is a player in the time of Shaul, Achitofel is a player in the time of David. So they never crossed paths. Despite the fact that David and Shaul crossed paths, it's clear that there is an age difference between them. Shaul is already the king when David is a nar. And Achitophel is around during the rebellion of Absalom, which is later in David's life. So given that information, you would assume that Achitophel and Doeg didn't necessarily see each other. It's not impossible. They could have seen each other. But Rabbi Yochanan says that they never saw each other, meaning that he's disagreeing with some of the statements that we saw before, that they were involved in learning together. All those statements could be reinterpreted to mean that they both did this independently of each other. But many of the statements before seem to say that Doeg and Achitofel were great learners and great Tamidei Chachamim, and it seems that they were together. Rabbi Yochanan's statement separates them. Rabbi Yochanan, Doeg and Achitofel lo chatzu yimeihem. Doeg and Achitofel didn't make it through halfway through their life. This again, we already brought the pasuk above for Bilam. We're going to invoke that same pasuk now for Doeg and Achitofel. We have a brayta that supports that. Anshei damim u'mirma lo yechitzu yimeihem. That a person's life is 70 shana, vim gvarot 80 shana. 70 years is a standard life. Half of that is 35. So lo yechitzu yimeihem. Anshei damim u'mirma. Men of blood and deceit will not make it through halfway through their life. They won't make it to 35. Kol shnotav shel Doeg lo ayu ela 34. Doeg only lived till 34. V'shel Achitofel einan an 33. And Achitofel only lived to 33. Now, this would be supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's other statement that Doeg and Achitofel didn't see each other. Because if they lived such short lives, it would be unlikely that they overlapped. Given that he was 34 and 33, it would be unlikely that they saw each other. Rabbi Yochanan b'tchila karat David Achitofel rabo, ulesov karo chaviro, ulesov karo tamido. The beginning, David called Achitofel his Rebbe, then he called him his friend, meaning his peer, and then he called him his tamid. Meaning that Achitofel standing vis-a-vis David goes downhill. Original Achitofel is his Rebbe, and then after time he becomes a peer, and then later on becomes his tamid, and the Gemara is going to be Pesukim. Tchila karo rabo. In the beginning he calls him his Rebbe, and we know this from Masechet Avot. By Masechet Avot, it teaches us this din that Achitofel was David's Rebbe, and he gave him tremendous reverence. That even if a person teaches you one or two things, you have to give them reverence as a Rebbe, which is, Vatai no shke'erki, you are a man of my equal, alufi, my companion, umyudai, my close friend. And over there, the Gemara uses the term aluf to mean someone who is above, someone who is a star, a great one. It's the way that it's used today in the common Hebrew. Ubusov karo chaveiro. And after that, it calls him his friend. In the same Perek in Tehillim, it says, Asheyach dav namtik sod. In the subsequent pasuk, it says that together we went out in order to uncover the sweet counsel or the sweet secrets. B'beit Elokim ne'alach b'ragish. And to the house of God, we walked in companionship or with other company. U'sov karo tamido. And then he calls him his student, because the pasuk says, Gam ish shlomi asher batachti bo. My close friend, who I had trusted in, Ochel Lachmi, who ate my bread, he deal alai ekev. He raised his heel against me, he turned against me. And so over here, Terashi says, Ochel Lachmi, lechem, is always a mashal to Torah. And Ochel Lachmi means that he ate my bread, he was eating my Torah. David saying about Achitofel, he was an eater of my bread, he was a talmid of mine, and he turned against me in the end because he joins the rebellion of Absalom. So you see over here a progression in David's description in the Perek in Tehillim. At first he's an aluf. He is the head. He's on top. And then afterwards he is a yachtav namtik sod. Together, a companion, a peer. And then afterwards, not only is that, he's ochel lechem. He eats my bread. Meaning that he's a student. And so you see the progression or the degrading of Achitofel's status vis-a-vis David in his relationship with David. Part of that might be natural, which is sometimes you have a Rebbe who teaches, but the student exceeds his Rebbe, and then at some point he becomes a Tamid Chaver, and at some point he even becomes maybe even greater than his Rebbe, so you do have that. Over here also, David HaMelech is also because of what happened with Achitofel. Achitofel makes a poor decision despite his great chokhmah, in a sense loses his status in David's eyes because of the choices that he makes. Similar to a Doeg Edomi, who makes choices that undermine and undercut his scholarship and his being a Talmid Chacham, Achitofel does the same thing, and then David's relationship with him deteriorates, especially when Achitofel joins the rebellion of Absalom against David HaMelech. Okay, I'm going to stop here on the top line of Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph.